Drive Time on RTE Radio 1 with National Irish Bank. The bank that brought Danske Bank's international expertise to Ireland is now bringing the Danske Bank name.
If previous years are anything to go by, somewhere in the region of 400,000 Dubs will vote in the European elections on May 23rd. Now, there's an interesting mix of name recognition, experience of the incumbent and appeal of the novel on offer here. And a number of the candidates join me in studio in alphabetical order, which coincidentally means starting with the youngest candidate, Sinn Féin's Lynn Boylan. Frontiers de Ross's alternate, Emer Costello, now standing as the Labour candidate, once in the Greens, then elected as a Labour MEP, but now standing as an independent after a high-profile bust-up, Nessa Childers, Fianna Fáil councillor and past thorn in Bertie Ahern's side, Mary Fitzpatrick, looking to hold on to what had been Gay Mitchell's seat for 10 years, Junior Minister Brian Hayes, Socialist Party's Paul Murphy, Joe Higgins' replacement now looking for the seat in his own right, former Minister for Energy and Communications and Green Party leader Eamon Ryan, and Breed Smith, People Before Profit City Councillor, running for the first time in a constituency that has always had a left-of-centre seat. If I got those out of order, it really proves that I can't spell. There was no favouritism being offered to anybody. Let's start with you, Mary Fitzpatrick. You're Fianna Fáil's best chance at getting a Dublin Dáil seat. Are you sincere about running in Europe, or are you just raising your profile?
I'm absolutely sincere about running for Europe and about winning this seat. I grew up in Dublin. I graduated with a degree in German and Italian. I emigrated like a lot of people in the 80s, and I spent the best part of 20 years working internationally in Europe, in the US, before I moved back to Dublin in 1998. I'm married, I have three children, and when I came back to Dublin, there was a lot of changes. Dublin had changed from being the homogenous city that I'd grown up in to being a modern, diverse city, and I really want to be part of it, and that's why I first stood for election in 2004, and that's why I have been a public representative for the last 10 years of the people of Dublin on City Council. It's been a real challenge. It's been a real challenge being in opposition. There's only 6 out of 52 city councillors for Fianna Fáil. But even in opposition, there's a real opportunity to make a contribution for your community and for your city. I've been very proud to represent the people that I've represented on the City Council. In Europe, it's really important in the next Parliament that we have MEPs who understand the issues on the ground here in Dublin and who can really champion Dublin, really be a champion for Dublin.
Where do your interests lie, though? 2007, 2011, you contested the general elections. 2009, you ran for the council, as you say. Now you're running for Europe. Are you a national politician, a European politician, or a local politician?
I don't see them being as incompatible. I see them actually as being complementary. I see the European Parliament as being the only elected institution of the European Union. It is where the people can have a say. It's where the people of Dublin need to have a strong voice. We need to have representatives in the European Parliament who not only understand the issues here in Dublin, but can really champion Dublin, who will not just be ambassadors for the government or will not be marginalised in a small grouping, who will actually, if I'm elected, I will be a member of the Alliance of Liberals and Democrats in Europe. That is a centrist political grouping. It is a grouping that can hold the balance of power in the next European Parliament and really influence the decisions that are being made in Europe, the budgets that are being approved in Europe. And that's what I'm about. I'm about representing the people from my community, from my city and from my county.
Eamon Ryan, if you are elected, what chance, given that you are the most high-profile Green Party politician left, what chance do you have of rebuilding your party from Brussels?
I can. Firstly, Brussels shouldn't be so remote. It is close and connected to the Irish political system. Most of the laws that we're passing here are passed first in Brussels. So we need to break the distance that exists between Brussels and our national parliament and our political system in general. So I don't see there's that distance. And if I was elected, if I had the honour of doing that, I would be doing it in a way of bringing Brussels back home here as much as I can.
That's a utopian set of ideals.
It's because
the question that I'm asking you to address here is the suspicion that many people will have in their minds is that many of you around this table are just in this to raise your profiles.
No, I'm in there to use the experience I've gained in the last 25 years in public life as a campaigner, as a councillor, as a TD, as a government minister, to put it to the best effect that I can for the people of my city. And I think I can do that in the European Parliament. And I think I can do that as well because we have people in our party coming through who I hope will be elected on the same day, and they will take on new leadership roles. We have young, bright candidates coming on. And I think the form of leadership we would have is something that can be shared, where you bring new people on and you give them a key role. And it's not the... and you need someone in Brussels. If you don't have a position in Brussels, we have a very strong connection to the European Green Party. There are 58 members of the Parliament in the Green Group at the present time. By my being there, that's an Irish voice in that highly influential group, and that helps this country, that's helped our party. That's why I'm going there.
Interesting question. What can you achieve in Brussels? Nessa Childers, apart from getting involved in a very high-profile row, what have you done in 5 years in Brussels?
Well, my track record speaks for itself. I am a sitting elected MEP already, and I'm an independent. I think one of the things I've done is basically exposing vested interests and standing up to the Irish government. But I've also worked in many public health areas, in the areas of Alzheimer's.
You didn't win that, though. All you really succeeded in doing was getting kicked out of your party and into the independent group, where you must feel a little bit uncomfortable sitting beside UKIP.
Well, can I just say that that is, I think that probably you don't know how the European Parliament works if you say that.
That's where I am
at this moment in time. If I'm re-elected, I will rejoin a political group, and it will be one that represents what I think are the needs of the people that voted for me. So let's just get that straight. But I do have a record. I've been there for 5 years, and I think that I've worked very hard as an MEP, and I would hope to be re-elected on that record. And you know, what else can I say to that except, you know, that I am running in the election, and I'm not trying to raise my profile for anything except this election. But of course, we all have to raise profiles in order to people vote.
Are you a Labour Party rose by another name?
A Labour Party.
I mean, essentially, are you still running as a Labour candidate?
I tell you, I'm a Social Democrat, and that those values of community and support for people that really need it, they are not solely owned by the Labour Party or any party for that matter. They have to do with what you believe in and who you represent.
Okay. I know you're not disassociating yourself there. Something which the Labour Party candidate, Eimear Costello, did do back in February when your posters omitted to mention what party you were in. Are you the non-Labour Party Labour Party candidate, Eimear?
Absolutely not. I'm very much proud to be the Labour Party candidate. I have represented the Labour Party for Dublin over the last 10 years. I was a Labour Party councillor in Dublin City Council. I was a Labour Party Lord Mayor of Dublin. And indeed, I have delivered, and I have been very effective as both a councillor, as a Lord Mayor. And over the last 2.5 years, I have very much espoused Labour Party policies. I have championed the European Youth Guarantee in the European Parliament. I have delivered on an anti-poverty programme in the European Parliament.
It's not a comfortable time to be running as a Labour Party candidate, is it? They're waiting to give you, at the smaller party, a kicking.
I have to say now that I've been out, I've been on the ground, I've been meeting people, and I've been discussing the work and what I have done and what I have accomplished. I think that I have a significant reputation. I'm somebody who is known to be effective, I'm known to be a hard worker, and I am known to be committed. And wherever I have travelled the length and breadth of Dublin, I have to say that the opinion that I'm told in the opinion polls is not really being reflected on the ground, and I would say that there is considerable support for me and for my candidacy.
Forgive me for pigeonholing everybody here, because we really are trying to get a grip with who you all are. Lynn Boylan, you're an ecologist. Why aren't you running for the Green Party instead of for Sinn Féin?
Because at the heart of everything that I stand for is about equality and social justice, and Sinn Féin best represents that message. You know, you can be a Republican and an ecologist at the same time.
I'm sure you can, but I'm wondering, and I wonder, are people on the doorstep wondering, have you hitched your star to the Sinn Féin wagon because you stand a better chance of getting elected than if you were standing as a Green Party candidate?
Absolutely not. I've been a member of Sinn Féin for many years now. What I'm hearing on the ground is what people want is they want somebody who's going to stand up and represent them. And that's what Sinn Féin are doing, whether that's at local level, Dáil level or European level. And that's what I want to be part of. I want to be part of a team that's going out there to Brussels to basically say to people that, listen, the Irish people aren't interested in being best boys in the classroom when it comes to austerity. What they want is a fair deal, and they want enough of the cutbacks, and they want somebody out there bringing that message. And that's why I'm running for Sinn Féin.
The other small bit of confusion might be, at Lindley Whalon stood in Kerry in the general election, but it's Lynn Boylan who is now standing here in Dublin.
It's Lynn Boylan. Is it? Look, I'm beginning to feel sound like Barack Obama. I have to carry my Brett Baird shirt around at me at this stage to prove my name is Lynn Boylan. Everybody in Dublin knows me as Lynn Boylan. All my family are Boylan. I've gone to college, gone to school, worked as Lynn Boylan, so it wouldn't.
Or was it opportunist to stand as Lindley Whalon and carry?
It wouldn't. It wouldn't make any sense for me to run as Lindley Whalon in Dublin. And you know, I've dealt with this question, but as I said, if I have to go around with my birth cert in my back pocket now just to prove that my name is Lynn Boylan.
All right, thank you very much, Breed. Breed Smith, People Before Profit. What are you telling people on the doorsteps about water charges? Are you saying a vote for me is a vote to overturn them?
A vote for me and a vote for People Before Profit and all of our candidates throughout the country is a vote to express absolute opposition to water charges. And I stand by that full square. I think the water charges is probably one of the most disgraceful moves that the government have brought in of late. Mm. And it comes on top of the property taxes and on top of the austerity and the USC and also the talk now of bringing in a universal health insurance. People are sick of it and they don't have it. And I think opposition to water charges is terribly important for environmental reasons as well. And in a big way, I want to highlight the question of climate change, the issue of how fossil fuel extraction is destroying the planet. Mm-hmm. And I just think that sometimes the debate around Europe and around politics in general is like so sleepy and slow. We are facing a massive crisis in terms of climate change on the planet at the moment. We're facing a humanitarian disaster, and yet we're not dealing with it. All of the deals that Europe are trying to shape and remake and hatch out at the moment are all about providing for and allocating systems and benefits to private companies to make more profit. There's nobody grabbing this by the horns and saying private companies in the markets will not deal with climate change and environmental issues. It has to be done legislatively by the European Union.
Let's just go back to my first question, though. Is a vote for opposition to water charges a bit of a wasted vote because they're coming anyway?
Not at all. I don't believe this is the case. I think that if both the Labour Party and Fine Gael get a kick in the teeth in both the locals and the European elections, and that water charges is made a central issue, water charges and the environment is made a central issue of which people show their protest, that they'll have to rethink their strategies. They'll be worried sick about it. And I think that we have to send out that message clear. First of all, in the elections, but it's not enough. We also have to mobilise people power against water charges, as has been happened in other parts of the globe.
Okay.
And they have defeated them.
Eight of you around the table, folks, I'm afraid I do have to parcel up the time. As you well know, as the law and the rules require, I have to try and share it out as equally as possible. Same question to you then, Paul Murphy. What are you telling people that you're going to be able to do about water charges? They are a fait accompli.
They're not. You look at the squirming of the Labour Party in the last days over the cabinet meeting because they're so scared about the water charges that they've already signed up to coming in. And the reason they are is because it's an absolute embarrassment, because they promised people that if people elected Fine Gael alone, they'd end up with water charges of €238. And it looks like every little hurts and we're going to be faced with water charges of €240 for an average family starting off. So they're already under massive political pressure. Like Breed said, a kick to the Labour Party, a kick to Fine Gael in these elections. We'll shake them, we'll put them under pressure. But then what we need to do is build a mass campaign of non-payment. And this is different than the property tax. Revenue is not involved here. The government is trying to create that impression. But people can refuse to pay the water charges. We can build a mass campaign of non-payment as defeated water charges in this city in the 1990s. That can be done again in this election. European and local is an important step in that.
Where would we be then with leaks going unrepaired, water quality getting worse, there being absolutely nothing to stop the virtual water shutdown of the city like almost happened last summer?
Fine Gael, in their election manifesto, promised people that they would not bring in water charges until they had dealt with the problem of the leaks. They've done nothing about it. They're spending €500 million to impose water meters, their only purpose of which is to impose this banker's tax, this bailout tax, this austerity tax. 42% of all our treated water leaks into the ground. That's what we need to have investment in to deal with. And we can get the money for that investment from a millionaire's mm-hmm. tax, from increasing corporation tax, from taxing the wealthy. Because the wealthy, there is a recovery in this country for the wealthy. The 300 richest people are 20 billion richer now than they were before the crisis. Richie Boucher, 840,000 euros a year. Corporations' profits are up 20%. And that recovery exists because austerity is intensified, because of the water tax, because of Job Bridge, because of exploitation.
OK, Minister Brian Hayes, are you enthusiastically telling people on the doorsteps, water charges, my idea, go pay it, please?
No, I'm not. I'm telling people on the doorsteps that, as they're telling me, that the recovery is underway, and a fundamental part of that recovery is our relationship with Europe. I suppose a lot of the work that I've done the last 3 years working with Michael Lunan on the ongoing EU negotiation has been around how do we get the country to a better place, given the fact that the country collapsed when the EU and the IMF had to come in as the lenders of last resort. And over that period of time, I think people do recognise that the recovery has been slow. When we came to government, every month, 7,000 people went on the dole. Now, over 5,000 people a month are getting jobs. And I think Europe is absolutely central. I'm listening to a lot of people around the table. It's a very negative message. I'm very optimistic about the country. I'm really optimistic about Dublin. Dublin has to be the key driver for the economy because of the economies of scale. We have so many international businesses here. And learning, as I have in the last 3 years, you know, that relationship, it is about our reputation. Our reputation was on the floor. And thanks to the hard work and the sacrifice of the Irish people, we've got this country to a better place. But an awful lot more needs to be done. And I think, you know what I'm thinking about this evening? There's 200,000 SMEs in this country. If half of them could employ one extra person, we'd go such a way to getting all our people back to full employment. And I think Europe, I know Europe because I'm there every second week in some shape or form, has an absolutely fundamental job to do in trying to help and reposition our economy.
Okay, but let me ask you the personal question then before we move back into the issues. Elevation to cabinet awaits you. A senior ministry could be yours. The political world is there. It's your oyster. Why on earth do you want to become a political non-entity?
I suppose our party has always taken that. I mean, we have a different view to other parties. We've always sent people who are known in their own right, who've been elected by the people. And we've always sent people who are enthusiastic about Europe because we are very pro-European as a political party. We sit with the European People's Party.
It's nothing to do with the heave, no?
No, this is everything to do with how I can help my citizens here in Dublin that I've represented for the last 20 years. And I've been elected and very privileged to be elected. I've seen something really important. I think when you look at the European Parliament now, Philip, the fact of the matter is that 60% of our domestic law is determined in co-decision-making power that the Parliament has. If you want to make a real influence in the shape of this country and the future prosperity of this country, you've got to be involved in the decision-making. And the truth is that the really big decisions are being taken in Europe, and that's where you should be.
Let's open it up a little bit here. Mary Fitzpatrick, one of your big, frequently repeated kind of clarion calls has been responsible opposition. Mm-hmm. How responsible are you on water charges? What are you saying on the doorstep?
Yeah, I've been very responsible. I suppose from city council perspective, it was a huge issue towards the end of last year when all of our water services were transferred from the local authorities to the Super Quango Irish Water. And in terms of water charges, and you're right, we have a very responsible approach on this. We see it's not opposition, blind opposition for opposition's sake. I believe that there is a place for a contribution to be made so that we can have an adequate and secure water supply in Dublin. But the government's strategy is all wrong. What they've done is prioritise the installation of domestic water meters in Dublin and across the country ahead of ensuring that the leaks are fixed and ahead of ensuring that there's an adequate and secure water supply for Dublin. Just in terms of
can't
Dublin...
Can't do those two things without money. You can't get the money without the meters.
But even if you just look at the way the deal is structured, I mean, it took €2 billion worth of public assets, transferred it from City Council to Irish Water and left the local authorities saddled with liabilities in excess of €300 million in terms of pension and debts. That is... The structure isn't good there from a financial perspective.
It's a sequencing issue, though. You will be encouraging everybody to pay their water charges and you'd be opposing Paul Murphy's campaign of civil disobedience?
My campaign is for an adequate and secure water supply for Dublin. We use 99% of all the water that we have available to us every day. We've only 1% spare capacity. Any other modern capital city would have 10 to 20% spare
capacity.
When
somebody asks Mary Fitzpatrick, should I pay this bill, what are you going to say to them?
Look, right now, what I am saying is that we need an adequate and secure water supply, and that's not what we're getting. The strategy of prioritising...
That's not an answer to the question.
Look,
will you be telling people to pay their bill or not?
We don't even know what the bill is. This is part of the problem.
When your party was in power with the Greens, Brian Cowan regularly boasted of excess money in the Exchequer. We now have 3 billion excess. We've great load of money during this boom. They did not invest a penny on what was obviously required, which was to fix up the leaking infrastructure of the water pipes. They didn't invest a penny in it.
That is not true. Now, they invested over a billion.
They did not deal with the problem. When the country was at the height of a boom, they did not deal with the problem. It's totally disingenuous of you now to say that should be done first and this is the wrong tax at the wrong time.
No.
When you were prepared to bring in that tax, had your government not fallen, you'd be doing the same thing now.
That is a very important point that Breed is making because I think that it is important to realise that it was Fianna Fáil that signed up to the water charges with the Troika in the first instance. And what amazes me about Mary talking about responsible opposition is that she neglects to say that for 7 years when she was on Dublin City Council, Fianna Fáil were in government. And while Mary may have had her constituency quarrels with Bertie Ahern, I have never once heard Mary criticise any of the Fianna Fáil policies that actually got us into this mess. I never heard Mary condemn the Troika agreement where water charges were actually being agreed. So I think it's a bit disingenuous for Mary to say, well, I'm in favour of water charges, but not now, not this one, and this isn't the way forward. To use a pun, Mary, it doesn't wash. But
okay, may I respond?
Neighbours,
please.
I think,
to be fair, first of all, there was investment in water services. There was over €1 billion invested. Secondly, Labour and Fine Gael have controlled the local authority, so they have for the last 10 years. Government gave €1 billion. How the local authorities use that money to actually improve the infrastructure that they were in charge of was a matter for those councillors, Fine Gael and Labour. But can I just say this? It is like saying that the way Eimear says that the Troika agreement, the Troika consistently said, if Ireland can meet its targets, they didn't care how Ireland did it. It's like the property tax.
Mary's going to finish the point then, Paul Murphy.
Okay. Just as the property tax, there was an agreement to a principle of a property tax, but it wasn't the unfair anti-Dublin property tax that took no account of the fact that people in Dublin paid more money for their properties and their homes than any other part of the country.
Let me just finish this point.
And the property tax that has been introduced takes no account of people's ability to pay. That's unfair, and it is a particularly anti-Dublin property tax. That is not what Fianna Fáil proposed.
I have the Troika agreement here, which Fianna Fáil signed, which Eamon Ryan, as a minister, also agreed with. It says we are planning to move towards full cost recovery in the provision of water services. What that means is water charges in excess of €500 for an average household. That's what Fianna Fáil signed up to. That's what the Green Party signed up to. That's what Fine Gael are driving to. The problem here is that the four parties and Labour Party, the four parties, they're all committed to the same austerity policies, right? The Troika programme was designed by the European Commission, the IMF, the European Central Bank. It was signed by Fianna Fáil and by the Greens, and now it's being implemented by Fine Gael and the Labour Party disgracefully, and that's why we need to break the consensus that exists within the European Parliament between the three big groups, whereby they agree on everything.
Nessa Childers.
This is exactly what it's about. This is about the Troika agreement and the absolute failure of the Irish government to do anything except go along with the European Commission, unlike Greece, Portugal and France. We are now heading towards another austerity budget with nobody saying we can't cut anymore, we can't tax anymore. Maybe we can tax certain groups, but we can't tax anymore. We have to actually start reinvesting in the economy. If we have to do that, we have to say to the European Commission, we're not doing it anymore. We're not doing this last 2 billion and we want some of that back. And I'm terribly sorry, but that's where this...
The truth of the matter is this, the taxation base of this country in 2008 collapsed. For the three previous years, we were taking in about 50 billion. And in 2008, it went down by about 14 billion. And it was inevitable, and I don't blame the last government, I have to say, I know Aim was a member of, but in the latter part of that government, they had to increase tax. It was inevitable, given the collapse, and we couldn't obtain money on the international money market. It is a good thing, in my view, my party's view, to widen the tax base. And it's not just about the question of property tax and domestic water charges. It's about other taxes. For instance, this government has increased capital gains tax, capital acquisitions tax. We've imposed difficult levies on the insurance industry because that's a fairness measure as well. The key thing, our strategy is based on getting people back to work. Why? Because if you can get people back to work and you have a competitive income tax system, it encourages people to work and encourages people to hire more people. And that's where I think we've got to focus this debate. All of this negativity, you know, the truth of the matter is this, we're spending 1.2 billion every year in this country on the provision of water, and 40% of it goes down the toilet by way of leaks, effectively. Okay. So if we are, an honest debate requires people not just to be sloganising and the negativity and all the kind of distortions they're trying to make, is to honestly engage with people in how we are going to fund our public services and really spur on the economic recovery that's happening.
I want to hear from two more people that we haven't heard from yet on this water debate before we move on. Lynn Boylan, is Sinn Féin going to be throwing its weight behind Paul Murphy's civil disobedience campaign, or are you going to tell people to pay these bills when they come?
Sinn Féin are opposed to the water charges, and we're opposed to all of the crippling taxes that Fine Gael and Labour have dumped on.
Sure, we're all opposed to paying them, but are you going to tell people to not pay them and let those bills accumulate?
What I want to take issue with is Brian Hayes talking about the recovery, because clearly Brian Hayes hasn't walked around and knocked on any doors if he thinks that there's somehow a great recovery going on in Dublin. He's right, we need to be positive about things and enough of the negativity, and that's why Sinn Féin have called for a stimulus and investment in jobs. That's why we're saying we need to be accessing funds from the European Investment Bank. The truth of the matter is that Labour and Fine Gael have drawn down less money from the European Investment Bank than the previous government did.
And they're
bottom of the league when it comes to the euro crisis countries. And don't tell me now, Brian, that it's because we're in a programme, because Portugal are in a programme as well, and we're drawing down half of the money they are per capita. So you're underperforming on investing in jobs. So let's talk about the positivities. What Sinn Féin want to do is we want to get people back working, and that's how we'll regain this.
Eamon Ryan, have you been uncomfortably silent throughout all of this? Because if you were a politician of principle and conviction, when you were in the ministry, which was most immediately connected to this issue, would you not have done something?
I was listening to what people had said here, and I was thinking of what I've heard listening to Dubliners in the recent weeks. And what I hear them saying is that they're not opposed in principle to paying for water. They don't believe that we should be the one only country in the OECD that doesn't have some. Now, some maybe do, but most Dubliners, decent ordinary Dubliners I listen to, they're saying they don't have a problem in principle. What they have a problem with is that it's not fair the way it's been done, because they're not putting in the meters that they said they would do. And we always saw it as a conservation measure. You don't put it in until you have the meters in place. And this government has only a quarter of the meters in place, which shows to me that it's not a conservation measure, it's a tax measure. And secondly, what I hear decent Dubliners saying is they want it to be efficient. They want to make some savings in the way it's done. And the way this government has introduced a new single authority with none of the savings that were expected, with keeping all the old same staff and everything in place for the next 12 years, means that there's no savings, so we're paying more than we should be. That's what drives me mad. Okay. Third point, if I can.
Very briefly, I agree with
Lynn and Breed that we need a stimulus. The Green Party, the central thing in the European Green Party manifesto is what's called a Green New Deal, to invest in just the sort of thing Breed was talking about, tackling climate change, improving our environmental infrastructure, which includes water and public transport. That's where the stimulus should go. That's where we can raise investment from the European Investment Bank, European Central Bank, to actually lift the whole European economy. And we do need to do that.
Okay.
And the way to do it is a new environmental energy economy and clean water economy. And we should be availing that and spending, rather than the Irish people paying for all of it, we should get European funding. And I think we can do that.
Eamon Ryan, thank you very much. We're going to take a break there. Back with the candidates after this. Okay, we've talked about jobs, we've talked about investment, we've talked about water. Let's broaden and change the conversation, the direction of the conversation completely. Paul Murphy, you sit with the European United Left group in the Parliament, a party that is very loud about abolishing NATO. With everything that we've seen happening in the past couple of weeks, with Russia resurgent and not in a good way, is that a good idea, abolishing NATO?
It certainly is a good idea. What's happening in the Ukraine at the moment is a real disaster for people in the Ukraine, clearly, but it also poses dangers for all of us in this world, with the tensions escalating between Russia on the one side and between NATO and the EU on the other. And you have both forces playing. Clearly you have Russian troops on the ground, that's clear. But there's no question that the EU, that the NATO has a hand in what's going on in Ukraine. And you look at the character of the new government, I think it's 7 ministers in this government have links to the far right, extremely anti-Semitic, extremely racist, etc. And so what's needed in Ukraine is not an escalation of rhetoric, and you should hear it in the European Parliament from the big groups. You think you're on the verge of a major military confrontation, saying we have to take on Putin, etc., etc. What we need is a solution in the interests of ordinary Ukrainian people, which is not about being pawns in a power play between Russia and NATO.
Has he characterised that correctly, Emer? Are you part of big militaristic, jingoistic groups in the party or in the parliament?
No, I'm certainly not. I think that it's important to remember that just 2 years ago, the European Union won the Nobel Peace Prize. And it won the Nobel Peace Prize because the European Union was actually founded on the ashes of the Second World War, and it was founded as a desire to promote peace throughout Europe and to build and develop unity and solidarity. And I think that when you look back even at the European Union, how the European Union has facilitated the peace process in Ireland, and I always remember John Hume's very poignant words about how the European Union was probably the greatest peace project that the world had ever seen. So I think that it is important that Europe does play a role on the world stage. Like, for example, I'm chair of the delegation to Palestine.
You have to share the time out with everybody. Eamon Ryan, if there was in a European Parliament that you were elected to a vote to put boots on the ground in the Baltic states where there is a large Russian ethnic population, would you vote in favour of that?
No, I don't believe that. Certainly if a NATO-led mission, I don't think we should be involved. I think we've provided a greater contribution to Europe by keeping our neutrality, our peacekeeping capabilities, and that's where we should concentrate. The other thing we should do, and I was involved back in 2009 in the Russian-Ukrainian gas dispute on the Council of Ministers at the time and saw it up close. The biggest threat that Vladimir Putin have against us is cutting off the gas tap. The best response is actually going at a radical efficiency and renewables front in Europe. That actually is the most safe, best political way of disarming the threat that does exist there, rather than putting boots in. And that's where I think we should go, and that's what I'd be fighting for in the European
Parliament. Brian Hayes, would you put boots on the ground if that vote came up?
I don't think it's going to happen, and I don't see any circumstance which that would help the situation. I mean, if you even look at the current state of the negotiations between the US and indeed the Russians, they recognise the seriousness of this situation. I've been in Ukraine, I've seen it's a very divided country. It's divided linguistically and in terms of the outlook east and west. Europe is part of the solution in this, and I agree with Eamon. We have got to invest in infrastructure around energy, because you can't have a situation where one large federation can continually effectively determine the gas flow from one part of Europe to another. That can only happen through investment. I think Europe has to invest in the Ukraine. I mean, look at the accession countries. Look at the extraordinary success of the 10 accession countries, especially in the East, who joined the European Union during our presidency over 10 years ago. That's been a phenomenal economic achievement. It's a phenomenal increase of living standards in those communities. Where Europe is at its best is on the social market economy, making sure that we create employment opportunities, extending the market for people. That's the key towards resolving these difficult issues that crop up from time to time.
The situation in the Ukraine is actually quite frightening. I find it frightening. And some countries in Eastern Europe also do. It reminds them of things that they'd rather forget. It's a difficult issue, because I do agree that the energy mustn't be used as a tool of blackmail or to invade any other country. Europe must take up a kind of more of a peacekeeping role there. And just to say that, let's never forget about the peacekeeping role of the Irish Army and the fact that they're in Syria, for instance. This has gone completely off the radar, and we mustn't go too far in a kind of anti-militaristic way. They do great work, and you know, I would certainly not agree with boots on the ground the way the other. I would agree with that, but it is a scary situation in the Ukraine, and there's no immediate answer to it that's going to stop it. Every day there seem to be new horrors happening, and I think Europe has to be very careful how that we don't act too much in our own interests that will affect the people there.
Breed?
Well, the way I see it is that the imperial powers of the European Union, and particularly the US with Obama's interference...
There's not many empires left now, really, within the European Union.
The European Union is an imperial power of itself. It has an agenda, and an imperial agenda, and that's manifesting itself in the Ukraine. And it's been aided and abetted by Obama's government through Kerry. And I think both of them should back off and stop any discussion or interference in the Ukraine.
Is Putin's government not the one with the obvious agenda?
No, it's not the
more obvious agenda.
Not at all. I mean, I'm not defending Putin's government, and they're totally wrong in the way that they're manipulating the situation. But there's no way that the European Union or the US can hold sanctions against Russia that are going to be effective. And all of this, you know, throwing shapes and threatening does not help. I don't think we have any right to interfere there. As the European Union, I don't think particularly the Americans have any right. And we seem to be joining hands with the Americans in the EU and putting agendas into the Ukraine, which are totally inappropriate and are dangerous. And
Lynn
I think
Boylan?
We should back off.
Well, I think this is a wider issue on the issue of Ireland's neutrality. And what I find ironic is that our MEPs, a lot of the MEPs who are over there, they might say that they're in favour of neutrality when they're back here on the doors because they know, and we've seen it with the last Red Sea poll commissioned by PANA, that 78% of people like the position of neutrality in Ireland. But like Brian Hayes's predecessor, Gay Mitchell, who's over there, he's actually wrote a book called Beyond Neutrality.
Yes.
So this is an issue, you know, people, the Irish people are very proud of their neutral stance. And what we're seeing in Europe, in the European Union, is this drive towards a more militarised European Union. And we've also had MEPs, Phil Prendergast, the Labour Party, voting on a report that regretted while we have people suffering from austerity policies, Irish MEPs voted to accept a report that regretted cuts to spending on military.
Mary Fitzpatrick, time to choose sides, get off the fence.
Yeah, I think the 28 member states, we have a role to play. We shouldn't overplay our hand. We shouldn't pretend like that we've got extra influence or we've got independence to act in a way that we don't. There are neighbours, though. They're right on our doorstep. So we cannot be, as Breed would suggest, completely hands off. I don't think that's realistic and I don't think it's practical and it's not in our interests or the Ukraine's interest. I think that Europe's role is as a force for peace, a force for unity, and we should show solidarity with our neighbours. But I do believe that if we are to be realistic about having any influence in the situation, we need to make ourselves more energy independent. We need to reduce our dependence on energy, and we need to increase our own independence through
turbines and reverse pipelines aren't going to make Mr. Putin go away
any time
in the next 5 years.
It gives us more independence to act and to make decisions without
Philip,
can I just
respond to something Lynn said? And first, I'd encourage you to read what Gay said because I think it was a very thought-provoking and honest contribution to the debate of actually building a foreign and defence structure across Europe that is something that we can contribute to. And I think it is important. I mean, we come with a lot of reputation. We're a small country, as Nessa said. The Irish Defence Force have done a superb job internationally in peacekeeping missions, and we should be very proud of that. And we should bring that to bear on trying to put in place a new architecture across Europe, which is all about conflict resolution. Effectively, what Gay said in that paper, which Lynn has distorted, of course, is that as the UN determines what should be done, we in Europe should be part of the solution rather than just some kind of militaristic outcome that unfortunately some people are wedded to.
Eimear?
Yeah, I think it's important too that as people have said, Ukraine is our very near neighbour. A lot of the countries on the periphery in the European Union have very strong recollections of their associations with Russia, and I think that it is really important. And I think that from that point of view, I think that Cathy Ashton, who is the High Representative, is actually engaging in diplomacy. I think that it's important though that we look at it and that we engage in real diplomacy and that we work through the issues, that we work with Ukraine, because remember as well that much of this started because Ukraine wanted to develop closer ties with Europe rather than with Russia. And so I think that it is important that the EU steps up its diplomatic efforts, and I think in fairness Cathy Ashton has actually done quite a good job in that regard.
Just go back to the fact when we joined the Union at the time there was a real question whether we would have to join NATO to get in, and just by good diplomacy diplomacy, we didn't. And actually what we've given over that time in the peacekeeping and the approach we've taken is actually balance the union far better. And it's not the soft option. Like, those troops in Syria are in a very difficult position. The Dutch, was it, or the Danes evacuated out of it because they thought it was, well, I have to be careful to say here, but they pulled out and we were asked to go in because the UN knew we were one of the few forces that actually would know how to handle that very difficult situation.
We should not lose that, and
it's not a soft option, it's the hard option, but it's one that we're good
at.
The
EU is not a force for peace in the world. Exactly. If you look at the threat of EU troops going into Chad, going into the Central African Republic, they're going in to protect the interests of French imperialism, French big business.
Irish troops went there. And I think the Chad mission from the Irish side was a really good example how you don't do it in an imperialist
way. People would be
way.
Appalled to know the hundreds of millions of euros of taxpayers' money in Europe that go to armaments corporations, and not just in Europe, but in Israel, Israel Aerospace, Elbit, the people who make the drones that kill the Palestinians, the people that make the apartheid wall, they get money from our taxpayers' money. We have a militarised Europe, we need a non-militarised Europe.
If it is an empire, why are people queuing up to join us?
Listen, I'm going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much all for joining me in studio this evening. Good luck on May 23rd when voting begins. Just let me run back through the candidates and the others who are not here. Mary Fitzpatrick, Fianna Fáil, Sinn Féin's Lynn Boylan, Paul Murphy, the Socialist Party, Fine Gael's Brian Hayes, Eimear Costello of the Labour Party, Nessa Childers, Independent, Breed Smith, People Before Profit, Eamon Ryan of the Green Party, and also not here, Tom Darcy, running for Direct Democracy Ireland, and Jim Tallon